When our boys were about 6 years old, I drove them one morning, many, many mornings actually, but one day when I was driving them to their first grade of elementary school, I heard the voice of one of them from the back seat saying, "What if it's all a dream?" I said, "What?" And he repeated it. "What if all of it is a dream?" I said, "What if all of what is a dream?" And he replied, "My life." What if I actually have a different life, some other place, and I'm dreaming this one? Kid was 6 years old. And maybe it is a question worth asking. I have asked it along these lines. Every day, you get up, you put yourself together as you can, you eat something, then you do your work, you see some people, you interact, look at screens, you see the news, always the same, you eat more, you clean up, you watch something, you go to bed, you get up tomorrow, and do it all over again. And what if the boy's suspicion is right, that we are kind of dreaming our way through it all? A loop of unreal images passed through but not lived. The clock of the real world ticking away while we drift through what we unbelievably and mistakably think of as our life. Wake up. I've always wanted to do that while preaching. And it's a guy named Paul who says it. Wake up. He's talking to people who don't know they're asleep. Wake up. Do you know what time it is? It's time to wake up. We open our eyes then and see that it is dark. Really, really dark. Go back to bed, Paul. It's the middle of the night, and Paul says, "Yeah, it's the night." But much of the night is gone now. The night, in his words, is far spent. Wake up. What's this about? What is meant here by night, by the darkness that envelops us as we sleep and dream? This is the thick, smothering darkness of all that is not right. The darkness of pain, all the dark of what is unjust and hateful and ignorant and meaningless, joyless, loveless, the darkness of a world half in love with death, the darkness that is the abyss of the absence of God, or so it may feel to us. And it's the terror of knowing that all such darkness, any of it, may not only surround us, but be within us. So close your eyes. Close your eyes to all of that. Close your eyes and drift away. You may not even know that you're doing it. Now, Paul is persistent, pokes us in the ribs. Wake up. The night is far spent. The day is near. It is time right now to be conscious, alert, awake, and alive to what is real, what is the truest of what is the most real. So get up, gorgeous, and get dressed. The light that's coming wants your eyes open and your life awake. I don't know about you, but I'm not a big fan of starting my day in the wee hours when it's not just dark, but there's a whole lot of dark yet to come. Many people have to do it. Thank goodness they do. Farmers, doctors, plenty of nurses and teachers and factory workers and parents of young children, they have to be up and at 'em in the wee hours. But you morning people, who just naturally roll out of bed and before dawn, a long time before, are ready for the day, ready to talk. I salute you and I admire you, and I'm very sure that we are not of the same species. I am a snooze bar dependent person. Jim Gaffigan said of hitting the snooze bar, "As my first decision of the day, I will go back to bed." And of course, there is a spiritual version of that. There is a mental, emotional, relational version of this. We have felt some urging of the Spirit. Something someone said, or something that just rose unbidden within us, or something that our weariness finally led us to know needs to happen, this urging to make some change, to do some new thing, to fulfill some needed task, to venture some new step in faith. And we mean to do it, we really mean to. But it is so warm and comfortable leading a drowsy, passive life. So we hit the snooze button on the Spirit's voice. And what we knew to do, what we even wanted to do, we did not. Augustine, in his Confessions, wrote this. And it's in the form of a prayer. "By the burdens of this world, I was sweetly weighed down as a person often is in sleep. I had no answer to give to you when you said to me, 'Rise, you who sleep, rise from the dead, and Christ will enlighten you.' I had no answer to make but only those slow and drowsy words, 'Right away, right away, let me alone for a while.' But right away was never right now. It is the saddest thing to be given an unrepeatable human life and to go through it in a kind of haze and numbness, an existence that is unresponsive, that cannot imagine, that cannot choose or will not choose life. Existence spent as a kind of sleepwalking. Possibilities passed by, opportunities left forfeit, relationships unnurtured, sins undealt with, wounds untouched. Relationships dying, miracles unnoticed, the soul dull, withered. I think there's no reason to look for casting blame here. I think the world itself lays upon us enough by way of experience, by way of observation by way of society itself, the ground of which is littered with sleepers. No need to cast blame necessarily on the self. There's blame enough to go round for our unawakened living. But do understand that we were made to live a fully awakened life. A life responsive, imaginative, a life of choosing with strong and life-giving choices, a life alertness to the presence of God and all else that is holy. In our text, the image of waking up is especially about being ready for and receptive to the coming of Christ, who long ago was born in Bethlehem, and who in great mystery will come to all creation at the end of time as we have known it, and who has promised to come to us here in our living, regularly, in our interactions with one another, in our worship, in our work, in our being, coming to surprise us if we are awake enough to look and listen to Christ's presence with us again. For us to be living awakened lives is to be attuned and welcoming to the visitations of divine love among us every day, and to live in such a way that is reflective of that love every day, as if any day could be the day of ultimate healing and redemption. How do we get there? How do we become better attuned and awakened to the visitations of divine love? Paul gives a surprising answer. He says, get dressed. Take off the works of darkness. Put on the armor of light. Dress yourself with the Lord Jesus Christ, he says. His picture is that while we have been spiritually asleep, we've been wearing for a long time some very threadbare, stinky old bedclothes. He points to some of the ugly rags worn by some of us sleepers of the world. On his list is excess, drunkenness, immorality, indecency, quarreling, envy. We could add to the list. I've got lots to add to mine. It's really striking to me, though, that in addressing our need to live more awakened lives, Paul does not introduce the subject of spiritual disciplines. He doesn't talk about prayer or mindfulness or meditation, getting ourselves closer in relationship to God. The language isn't like that. The language is essentially, quit the behaviors and the attitudes and the actions that are doing you harm and doing others harm. Just stop that. Stacy says, get dressed. I would have started with something more spiritual. Paul says, there are behaviors and attitudes in your life that if you'll begin to lay them aside, awakening will have a better chance in you. You know what they are. For you, you know. Ask for what help is needed. Turn away from that and toward new ways, which is now what Paul says. Put on the clothes that really could be called the armor of light. He again refers to the new clothes as putting on Jesus Christ himself. Your new clothes are made of light, the beautiful light of kindness, truthfulness, openness, courage, generosity, faithfulness, patience, love, forgiveness. Try wearing those on your life like a garment of light. Did you know that in some of the earliest churches, when someone was being baptized, their old clothing and jewelry were removed, and the water was entered, and the baptism administered. And then the person was clothed in a clean new garment, a bright one. It's a wonderful picture of what baptism signifies. And it is a wonderful picture of what can be experienced over and over in a life that's on its way to the truest awakening. All of this happens when the night is still dark. This talk of waking up and putting on new clothes isn't about charging out into the light. It's about living in hope. Night is not finished at all. It's just far spent. What light we have is the light Christ has been clothing us with. Christ we see others clothed also in. It is not day. It's plenty dark, but it will be day, and it's time to awaken. Carl Sandburg has a poem called Awakened, which paints the picture well. Daybreak comes first in thin splinters shimmering. Neither is the day here nor the night gone. Night is getting ready to go. And day whispers, soon, now, soon. Have you heard of the Dawn Chorus? Scientists came up with that term to describe what birds do as the night is nearing its end and daybreak is about to come. One or two birds only are the beginning of it. It doesn't start all at once. But after one or two or three have become, the chirping and the singing swell to a chorus of welcome of a new day soon to begin. And this is who we are. This is how we live. When the night is far spent and the dawn is near, we lift our voices and our lives to join a dawn chorus, a song of those who are being awakened by love, clothed in light and ready to say, in spite of much of the evidence, ready to say, to each other and to the world. Good morning.